Can I help you? What do you want?
Welcome back to another episode of School. I'm Liv.
And I'm Mel.
And we are back with another installment in our Black in Education series. Again, another exciting time being able to discuss with different educators their experience being Black in education. And this week, we have three special guests as we talk to the men, or some men in education.
Yes.
Some men who happens to be minorities in a couple different ways. They're men and they're Black in education, which makes them like a double minority in our area or our sector. So I'm going to have them introduce themselves. And I'm going to start with Jonathan. Tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jonathan Pulliam. I am currently going to my third year of teaching in New Orleans, Louisiana. I teach third grade ELA. Happy to be here.
Thank you. And I'm going to send it to Wallace.
What's going on, fam? I am Wallace. I am an educator of 5-6 years teaching history and social justice curriculums. I also have been in the political organizing game since 2012 as well.
And last but not least, Chris.
Hello, everybody. My name is Christopher White. I am going into my 7th year of teaching, and I'm a middle school ELA teacher at Texas, going into Texas now, but leaving High Point, North Carolina.
Awesome. Very cool. So, you know, this is our first time ever having men on school, ever. Ever. Ever, which is kind of hilarious.
Diversity.
Kind of hilarious because originally, like our podcast stats, it would say 0% men, and now we've grown to like 12%. So
we're
in the game. Hey,
baby steps.
You're growing your market here.
And also interesting because Liv and I always talked about like, oh, we should do an episode about Black male educators, even when we first started the podcast. But here we are 3 years later. Dun-dun-dun. I know. Make it happen.
Okay.
And what's also hilarious to me is just like one of the previous episodes with Kenesha and Angel, people I've worked with for years now, like Chris and I worked together for a while, and I never told him I had a podcast. It's just right. Like people I could have talked to or had on the show. I don't know. Y'all pray for me. I mean, it's work-life balance. Like sometimes, you know, you just gotta separate things. So with that said, we're gonna jump into the honor roll. And I'm gonna send it to Jonathan. Jonathan, do you have anything you want to place on the honor roll this week?
Yeah, celebrating that. It's interesting, like with COVID and with like school closures, something that's really come up to me is like, if there's something you want to do, like start it today because the world could end tomorrow. So I got 2 admissions offers from my top 2 schools for MED programs this week, and really, really excited about that.
That's super dope. That is awesome. And Chris, you have some news to share as well, something you wanted to celebrate.
Yeah, I celebrated taking the big item off of my moving list. I finally went and secured my moving truck. I know it sounds small, but it's all very overwhelming when you think about a move across the country. But now that that's done, I'm one step closer to having that process finished. And if I could just add on to my honor roll, going off of what my guy just said, COVID, you get the time, you want to just put in the energies into a different place. I actually put my energies into my writing, and I was able to finish chapter 1 of the novel that I've been sketching and storyboarding and diagramming for like the past, well, I don't know, year and a half. So
yeah,
now it's gone from planning into actual drafting, and that's exciting to see.
That is awesome. Chris, I've heard about this novel, and I'm glad that you're writing. I'm excited.
Awesome, bro.
So to piggyback off of that, I think that this is a really great time for Black creatives, and not necessarily the work that has come out in the last 4 months where many of us have been at home, but just the work that is now being recognized because of the heightened awareness of, you know, Black lives and just Black people. I think some people are just now realizing that Black people are are here. We have a lot of things to contribute and have been contributing to society. I know we shouted out music, Black Music Month, a couple of episodes ago, but really some really great works as far as some novels. I even saw that the Vanishing Half, the author of that, I can't remember her name right now, but she got picked up by HBO for a series based off of the book. So it's just really great. Jacqueline Woodson, right? Say it again.
Isn't that Jacqueline Woodson? Mm-hmm.
The Vanishing Half? I don't think that's her. Maybe, maybe not. We'll look it up. But it's a really great time to be a creator.
Oh, Britt Bennett. That's who it is.
Yes, it's Bennett. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm excited for that. What about you, Wallace?
To really build off what you were saying, I have two honor roll highlights. So my first is for this really dope Black woman writer, Austin Channings Brown. She recently published her new book, I'm Still Here, Blackness in a White World. And I really, really suggest that book to anyone with some free time, particularly white educators who just need to know more about what our experience is and how they can elevate Black voices. It's really, really good, really, really good work. My second highlight for the honor roll would be this past month, my colleague and I, Crystal, we started a new nonprofit called the Do More Campaign, which is really just trying to activate folks from the Black community and allies to do more to really affirm Black life and make positive change.
That's so cool. Like, if you guys haven't checked out the Do More Campaign, definitely check out their work and donate so that way you can help fund their work. They've been doing some really cool things in a really short amount of time, and we like to help them sustain their work. We'll talk a little bit more about that later, but I guess for my honor roll, I would also like to shout out Black Girls Teaching. I know that I have mentioned them on here before. I'm a stan, but whatever. They had a really, really cool virtual retreat, the Level Up Retreat. It was so cool, so affirming. If you know anything about the importance of like affinity spaces and professional development for educators, it's so valuable to have those spaces where you can be with people who have similar experiences to you. So it was just a really beautiful thing just to be surrounded in a virtual space by like Black women in education in various capacities and learn from them. And it was just a really healing experience. Like, I had the warm and fuzzies all day. Like, I thought I was going to like log on, do my little panel that I was on, and then just like have it play in the background while I did the rest of my stuff around my house. And that didn't happen. So it was really great. They're having another one August 8th. So if you are interested in attending, definitely mark that on your calendar. And it was only $10. And I think they should go up on their price because it was a really invaluable experience. And there are a lot of people who are charging a lot more, doing a lot less, but I will leave that right there. So, Liv, do you want to take us into today's topic or question?
I called that out a couple of times. Yeah, people going to unfollow me. I don't care. Y'all not doing nothing.
Right.
So, we're going to start off with the same question we've started off with all of our guests. What do you love about being a Black educator? And I'm going to send this to... Let's see, I'm going to send it to Wallace first. What do you love about being a Black educator?
I mean, so much. I think first and foremost, I love being in front of my Black babies, my Black children. I mean, like, they are why I do this work. I tell people all the time, I'd much rather deal with kids' problems all day than adult problems all day. And just, I mean, I grew up and didn't have a Black educator till I got to college. And to be that for middle school students, it's just, and to see that impact like every day when you go into work, like it's just awesome. I wouldn't trade it for the world.
That's awesome. And you kind of piggybacked, or you already answered the question that we usually do, which is what age were you when you had your first Black teacher? Like, wow. I think you're the latest one. I don't know if anybody else has said college. Wow, that's interesting. Chris, what about you? What do you love about being a Black educator?
I think being able to, like you said, teach our kids and go into our communities and see our babies. And then to be not just a Black educator, but be a great educator for them. Like, I always think about, I want the kind of teacher that I didn't have. And that's who I want to be, you know, for my kids. And when you're Black and you're a man, you know, there are spaces that you can go into and affect differently than a woman can, or differently than, you know, a white man can or a white woman can, simply because diversity matters, you know what I'm saying, in that sense. And I think kids get so used to seeing, you know, females and women in the authority position when it comes to education and teaching and nurturing, that when they do get the experience that from a black man, I'm excited that I might be breaking some stereotypes in their minds, you know, widening for the black boys who are going to see me and watch me, like kind of expanding their idea of who they get to be and what they can, you know, be passionate about. Because I just remember when I was in school, I didn't have that. I think I've had black teachers, but they were all women. I don't think I had a black male teacher who wasn't a PE teacher until 11th grade. And so, and he wasn't even my teacher. He was just in our building.
Yeah.
And I remember him. So I'm happy to be able to like change that. Like he said, for our middle school kids, like my 12-year-olds now know they had Mr. White.
Now I'm thinking, I'm like, who's my first black male teacher who wasn't PE? I think my first one, I had a science teacher. He taught Mr. Milliken. It was, what kind of science was it? Was it chemistry? Yeah, it was chemistry.
Yeah, I had one in
ninth grade.
Great. He was from Nigeria. He was great. I loved him.
Mr. Milliken was cool. He was real cool.
But you remember him? It's...
Yeah. He also worked at, this is a funny story, Mr. Milliken had a part-time job. He always reminded us that, like, they didn't pay him enough and that he had to work at Macy's part-time in the jewelry section.
Gosh.
And he taught us a lot about diamonds, which was interesting in terms of, like, science. But I do remember that because Mr. Milliken was like, well, when I leave here, I go to Macy's. And I was like, I didn't realize how real it was till I became a teacher. And I was like, okay, so...
Yeah, I love teachers who overshare. Just like, oh, really? Okay. Jonathan, what about you? What do you love about being a black educator?
Similarly to how everyone said, I love seeing like our kids see someone that looks like them really early on. So teaching fifth grade and now going down to third grade, I think like every single day you're planting seeds that are gonna come up. It could be like tomorrow, it could be like 10 years from now, but our kids are so like full up of their own experiences and they're so like full up of their own character and intelligence. And I'm super proud to be in the room where that happens and to be able to be part of like facilitating kids finding like their own brilliance.
Mm-hmm. Now you say you went from sixth to third?
Yeah, so my first year teaching, I had fifth and then co-taught sixth, and then next year, going to year three, I'm going down to third grade.
Ooh. I know we'll have to circle back and see what your experience is like with the little ones. Yeah.
I'm praying for you, bro.
Yeah. I know third grade for me was a hell of a year. Like, I still think third grade was the hardest year of my academic career ever in life, because they throw other things at you, like multiplication, fractions. Multiplying and dividing fractions.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't ever remember third grade being like departmentalized. So I'm like, at the school I'm going to next year, there's like kids are like moving classes and stuff. Okay. I was like, I do not.
I had to learn from the same wench the whole day. The same what, Mel? Wench. I didn't like my third grade teacher.
Wench. Lord,
right?
Wench. I heard wench. That wench, boy, really that thing hit different.
It's a wench.
Like,
well, I think of third graders as seventh graders, as and the same as 10th graders. They're just stuck in the middle. They don't really know up from down, left from right. But they're still sweet kids because they're still trying to figure out that balance. So third grade is really like, do I want to be hard or do I want to be a baby? I don't know. And it depends on but that's an interesting journey. I'm excited to hear about your
experience. Yeah, that is. You don't hear that often. You usually hear people go like up in grade level. You don't really hear people like going from a higher grade level to a lower grade level.
I told you, Mel, there's room for you in elementary.
I will not.
Come on down. Just come on down.
What God has for me is for me. That ain't it.
It's not. Listen, I touch and agree with you on that one, Chris, because that is not my ministry.
No, see, not at all. And we need y'all, because I really, me and teenagers, we don't, I can't.
So my next question for you is kind of on the flip side of that, what troubles you about being a Black educator, and specifically, like, what troubles you about being Black male educators? I'm going to give this to Chris first.
I think one thing that kind of troubles me, it's two things actually, and maybe I'm kind of opening up a can of worms here, but I'll save that for my second one. The first thing that troubles me is that I'm seen, before even being observed in the classroom, there's the assumption made that I'm going to be great at classroom management, that I'm going to be a disciplinarian, that I'm going to be a problem solver, just by walking in there. And I've seen first year teachers, Black males who were hyped up like that and thought, oh, well, shoot, just because I'm me, they're going to bow, they're going to listen. And that's not the case at all. And I think that when you're put like sort of in that box, it either sets you up for failure or it limits you. Because then, let's say, for example, me, I'm not afraid of my students. I'll put it like that. And I make sure that I have control over my classroom at all times. I'm also, from the South, I'm old school, so I might gather somebody else's class if it seems like they're not responding how they should to that authority. But I've seen, instead of that being seen as, like, me helping someone out, it could be seen as me overstepping my bounds, as me trying to exert my male privilege, as me trying to enter a space that's not mine, or they're going to rely on me and start, it becomes the expectation. And I stop, I lose my ability to be the friend or the nurturer or, the funny guy. And I'm always the, oh, here he comes, get right. So that's one thing that troubles me. The second thing that troubles me about being a Black male teacher is I live with this daily paranoia or this daily concern that I need to be very conscious in, like, all of my interactions with my kids. Am I going to be perceived, if I spaz on a kid, is that going to be this angry Black man was yelling at my child, or, he got in my daughter's face? It was a lot different than when, the way I might move may be perceived completely different than the way it would be perceived. It was a white woman who got just as loud, but her voice was a little more shrill, or was just as angry, but her movements weren't as threatening. Things like that concern me. So I feel like I'm always having to be more conscious than my coworkers are, not even just in gathering, getting kids together, but, loving them, hugging them, just being, affectionate. You just have to be very, breaking up fights. I'm the most, please don't fight in my presence. I like my management to be the thing that wards you off. Because if it breaks out, I'm only comfortable breaking up a fight if it's two males. If my female students are fighting, and we know that our kids fight savagely in some places, I may have the ability to step in. I may need to step in. It could be 100% appropriate that I step in, but I'm like, nah, I'm going to wait till Miss Jones come down, somebody get them. Mm-hmm. And like, those things bother me because, again, it's like, it could always already be bad, but being Black means you have to be ready for that Black magnification. So it could become even worse. It would be seen even more aggressively or even more offensively because it was a man and it was a Black man at that.
You dropped a couple things, but I'm gonna come back to it. Jonathan, what troubles you?
That, Chris, all that completely resonates. I think what troubles me sometimes is, like, my experience has been completely in charter schools. And what I've often found, like, this really weird line to toe is a lot of the, I guess, behavior management or classroom management things that I've experienced that I'm expected to uphold involve policing Black kids' bodies. And so my, like, discomfort often comes from, like, okay, this is what admin is expecting me to do. It does not feel right as a person, doesn't feel right, like, as a Black person, doesn't feel right me telling this to Black kids. Mm-hmm. And my rent is still due. And so it's like this weird line to toe between, I do not want to further traumatize kids, and then looking back on, oh, like, I had to, like, keep my hands, like, this close to my knees or whatever, like, to walk down the hall. And also, I'm here because I want to teach, and, like, I also, like, have a life to live that requires me to have a job. And so it's like this very uncomfortable space sometimes where it creates, like, am I, for sake of needing a job, am I furthering some type of, like, emotional or mental trauma to my kids? And that, like, doesn't always sit right with me.
I'm hearing a lot of cognitive dissonance here.
Okay, Wallace, go ahead and finish this out. What troubles you?
I mean, it's honestly a lot of the same things that were said before, but there's just like one, there's just like a toxic culture where, like Jonathan was saying, where they like, if you don't drink the Kool-Aid, they will flip the script and make it as though you're the one embodying racist beliefs, or you don't believe in high expectations for our Black kids because you will not buy into our definition of what that looks like. And it pushes a lot of great Black educators out of the classroom, which is a disservice to our kids, first and foremost. It puts us out of a job, like Jonathan was saying. And then I also just think, like, the flip side of that, almost to Chris's point earlier, is like, I feel like Black educators, Black male educators, will be given a lot more responsibility, whether it's to be the disciplinarian or to be that extra support. But we never get any of the validation, recognition, or advancement that our counterparts will get for those added responsibilities. I feel like whether we end up on the same, like, our trajectory for advancement is eons slower than what it is for our white counterparts. They'll love to give us responsibility, but always want to make sure that there's a white face that is taking the full credit for what we do.
That's really interesting that you mentioned that, because Liv and I have talked a lot about, like, the way in which that Black male educators often are fast-tracked to administrative roles, at least in the public school setting, like in comparison to Black female educators who may have more experience or more education. Kind of like, I mean, because I know Black male educators that started teaching with me and they became assistant principals after 3 years. On the flip side, like, I've known people who have been trying to get assistant principalships or in administration for like 5 years and still haven't had that opportunity. But because, well, so I guess I think it depends on like the setting, if that makes sense.
I think it also depends on the person too, because like not to throw shade at anyone who does do what they got to do to rise up through the ranks, but like for a lot of places, if you're one who's going to buck up against the system and will speak out against some of these questionable taxonomies, you're never going to be the one who rises. So I think
people were people who played the game. Now I think about it. But you know, and that frustrates me. And I know we were talking about which frustrates y'all, but I'll add something else that frustrates me because I can do that. But like, what frustrates me is like, there's so many people, you know, we talk about these problematic things, but there's so many people in roles who could change that, but they just become socialized to the systems that they claim that they're going to subvert. It's so many people who are far more invested in system maintaining than disruption and abolition of problematic systems in schools. And so, like, when we talk about, like, you know, people playing the game or playing that role to get ahead, it's, I don't know. I think I would get frustrated with people saying, well, like, at least it's a Black person in this leadership role, or at least it's a Black principal or assistant principal or superintendent or whatever it may be. And I'm like, but what are they doing?
Maintaining the system.
So. Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of people who, you know, I won't say that they, I want to say that they're failing. I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but I think a lot of people, they do advance, and they're more like, well, I know this is the problem. Yeah, we like testing, for example. Yeah, well, testing ain't really all that important. We know testing don't really matter. We know it's more about growth, but, you know, but then in the same breath, they say, but here's what they expect. So we have to do boom, 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 which means, you know, whether they're admitting it or not, that you're speaking to employees, you know, you're leading a team, and your tone is already dismissive of your own orders. Right. And so you're kind of fueling this disenfranchisement, this, you know, this lack of engagement with what it is that you're supposed to be doing. Because you give the impression that, well, I'm just doing what the man says do. And then it's not met with, but here's what we're going to do that is revolutionary. Mm-hmm. Here's what we're going to do that is, you know, against the line, that we're going to be able to get away with because we did what the man says to do. Mm-hmm. It's more like, well, we're just doing it. Y'all know how it is. And ain't nothing about it. But I agree with you. System sucks. And it's like, damn, where's the...
Right. It's a lot of activism. Checking boxes happening in schools. Mm-hmm. Like, well, we got to do this to check this box. And I don't know, like, since you mentioned testing, I just get so over, because, you know, even College Board, the people who make these tests, will come out and say that testing is biased, but they still make the test. Like, right. So it's just like this whole loop of, like, problematic practices that people are invested in financially, and that people are not willing to divest from because they're financially gaining from these practices. So
I want to touch on something that I think all of you mentioned as far as like being an assumed disciplinarian, which is something we have also discussed with like some of our other Black female counterparts. Just like you come in and they expect you to, I don't know, get these kids together.
Right.
It's just like, well, I don't want to. I want to love on them and hug them. You know, I want to teach.
Right. Or I just want to teach.
Right.
And yeah.
So you're often not given that liberty to just be. You have to be a disciplinarian. You have to be this leader that you might not necessarily want to be in that moment. And I personally have seen that more in more white schools. I've seen that. Especially dealing with like Black kids, if Black or brown students are a minority in a school, they're like, well, you're Black, you can kind of get that together.
Right.
But I've also seen it in Black schools as well, where especially when you talk about the men, they just think because you're a Black man, you can lay down a law like somebody's daddy, or they assume all these kids have daddy issues and they need
a
father figure. So it's so many layers to that, but
interesting that you mentioned that, Liv, because we had a Black male teacher in our department this year, and one of my coworkers, he saved her from getting her ass whooped after she provoked a student.
All right.
It was so funny because after that happened, every time she would see him, she would like all of a sudden like tear up and like, oh my God, thank you so much for saving my life. And he was like, I was trying to make sure that kid didn't get, you know, like she didn't lie on that kid, or say something. He was like, because she provoked that boy. He was like, I wasn't trying to save her. I was just coming in trying to make sure that this young Black male was okay in that situation. But it's so funny because like after that, people started looking at him as a disciplinarian, but I loved what he would do because he just wouldn't show up. Like, people like, yeah, I'm gonna be down there in like 15 minutes. And then he turned around and be like, I ain't going down there. Like, it's so funny to me. Like, this expectation that like a Black man is gonna come save you, they wouldn't ask that of the white men in our department.
And then also, kind of on the flip side, when there's like that assumed expectation and then you don't subvert to it, or you don't say, or like, that's like not my business right now, then it automatically makes you look like someone that's like not playing on the team or doesn't want, like has low expectations for kids. Because I don't know, I think like first and second year, that's something that I was kind of always, my approach to kids is always, like you said, I want to like love on them. I want to like hug them and tell them like, oh, you're beautiful. And then I was constantly told, like, don't do that because then, like, they won't, whatever, whatever. And I'm just like, that's not.
Yeah, like, that's not my goal.
Like, my discipline for kids just often looks different than what's expected. And then because it looks different, then I'm, like not scoring high in all these observations. I'm just like, y'all can
do it. And I know since I've been in the high school my whole career, maybe this, I don't know, this just sounds kind of foreign to me in terms of, like, people mandating certain management styles in individual classrooms. I didn't know that was a thing until like just hearing you guys talk about it.
Yes, ma'am. Wallace, you look like you were about to say something.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was just gonna say that like I feel like when we are asked to step in those moments, at least for me personally, I feel like the other teachers or my staff is forgetting how we as Black educators, Black male educators, like leverage the relationships that we have in the classroom. Like my kids act the way they act in my classroom because of the loving relationships that we have, because of the that we have. Like, that's why they're not going to show out in my classroom like they're going to show out in somebody else's classroom.
Right.
Step up into that space. All I'm doing is just reminding them that you have to show the same level of respect to this adult as you show to me. Like, I'm not going to be your disciplinarian. That's not my job.
Right.
And if you come into my classroom, my kids didn't have the same level of rigid rules that a lot of other classrooms in the same building had, because we operate on totally different bases than everywhere else. That's why the results were different. So they're never going to get that.
Go ahead.
Well, I'll play a little bit of devil's advocate, just to the degree of they're on the other side. There is some truth to, you know, our effectiveness at being able to come in and regulate, you know, a situation. But like, you know, like you said, it is definitely fueled by that relationship part. We do form those relationships, so we have that power. And I think that we also have to acknowledge that some of our kids are also being conditioned because of what I like to see as a failure in training for teachers who aren't male and who aren't Black. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of our students see them as, okay, here she come. You know, it's like, for a lot of people, it's an instinctive rebellion, you know, that they want to give. And it's not because they're Black, you know, it's because of the community that they come from, or the past experiences that they've had with a white teacher, or how they've heard mama or daddy or grandma or somebody talk about Miss So-and-so or Mr. So-and-so way back when. And then you mix it with the conditions that coming to the school, you know, coming from home, the fights, the poverty, the stress, just the being Black. And you mix all that. Of course, you're going to get that pushback. You're going to get that anger. You're going to get that, what they like to call disrespect. But I think it should happen is, instead of, don't just fill your school with Black men because you want our presence to be there to sort of, you know, to reach kids that you can't reach. How about also watch us and observe and learn from what we're doing and see if you can train people who don't look like us to relate to our kids more, to make our students feel like even if it's not the same type of relationship, I have just as strong a relationship with my white teacher as I do my Black teacher, as my male teacher, as I do my female teacher. Because what we do isn't unique to us being Black men. It's not like we got a Black man magic bag. We're like, all right, let me pull out that Black man swag bomb, boom, got it. Half the room's paying attention now. That doesn't exist. We just talk to our kids the way we know to talk to them from our communities and our cultures. But I don't know. It's a struggle for white teachers, I'm sure. I just don't think it's a struggle that I have to feel bad for them. You know, like, oh, they can't do it. I think it's something they just need to be better equipped to do.
Yeah, can I actually add a point to what Crystal was saying real quick?
Yeah.
So, it actually brings me back to a question you were asking earlier about, like, what troubled us, or when did we first realize that, or we first realized our Blackness in the classroom. Like, I think the toughest lesson for me in my first 2 years was realizing that, yes, I am Black and my kids are Black, but that doesn't mean that we're automatically going to vibe with each other. Like, my
experience is so vastly different.
Than the Blackness that was experienced by the kids that I taught. And it wasn't until I not only acknowledged that difference, but accepted that difference, that I was able to fully be myself in my classroom and allowed my kids to fully be themselves. And that's when we realized that's when the vibe really started to happen.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was kind of, I was going to make a comment about that too, as far as like understanding that Blackness is not monolithic, and I don't think a lot of white teachers understand that, and the nuance in culture and the cultural capital that you need. Because on the one hand, while I do think they do need to be better equipped so they don't have to call me crying, on the other hand, some things they're just not going to be able to do, because there is a cultural capital that I have with the young Black men and women in my classrooms that they will never have, because they're not a part of the culture. And that's not something a textbook can teach you. Because they can get up there and try to act or try to pretend to, you know, be culturally acclimated. But oftentimes that's not necessarily something that you can teach. And I think, I agree, they definitely need to be better taught how to do it. But I often still see that teaching and failing, or those things still failing. Like, when people do the trainings, when they do go through, like, they're still something that's missing. And I think over the course of the past few episodes, what Liv and some of our guests have talked about is just like this like particular thing that is kind of a relationship between Black teachers and their Black student. And I just don't think that can be taught. I don't really know the words for it, but
what'd you call it? Swag and sauce meal?
Yeah, we call it swag sauce. We call it je ne sais quoi. Like, we call it all types of things.
Oh, yeah. Je ne sais quoi. I like that.
But it is something that, I don't know, that just can't be taught. So, like, when my coworkers are, like, would come to me, and this happened a few times, like, where they're like, yeah, so how's such and such doing in your class? Like, she always has an attitude. And I'm like, no, she doesn't have an attitude to me because I speak Black girl fluently. So, like, I'm not going to interpret that as an attitude.
Yes. Exactly.
Like, they don't get it. And so they're just like, they're looking at me crazy, like, oh, well, what magical thing did you do? Nothing. I just speak her language.
Mm-hmm. Right. And real quick, you know, like, they don't know the power of who you're talking to. Like, that simple. Who are you? Like, that.
And sometimes you don't even have to say it. You just have to.
Just a look.
Yes.
Just block eyes real quick.
And you're right. That's that culture. Because you know what? I think about, you know, working at the schools I worked at for the past 4 years, it's a majority Black school. But it's very mixed, and you know, it's very diverse as far as, you know, where we come from, the income levels, you know, and we teach a healthy amount of white kids, I would say. More white kids I've taught my entire career, which has only been 6 years, but it's the most, right? And I find myself as a Black male, like, I might be able to quickly gather someone up and not even think twice about what I did. But if it's, when it comes to Blake or, you know, Max or one of my white students, the same, I find myself, like, if they're acting out or if they're doing something that usually would, you know, catch my behavior, I'm policing myself all of a sudden. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Now, how do I do this with him? Because I don't know that. And again, this is what that Black man feel like. I don't want some parent coming to me thinking that I was being extra hard on their kid because he was the white kid. I was extra hard on the kid because of, for whatever racially motivated reason, when I was really just being a fair, equal opportunity, you know, catchers, what I like, you know, like, I punish everybody equally. But I find myself trying to figure out, how do I talk to them? How do I relate to them? How do I get them to take me seriously without causing a problem? You know, without, I've never struggled with it as far as like effects go, results. But, you know, there is that debate you have with yourself in the moment. Like, I mean, but I also feel like, well, that's the case. If I can do it, if I can still do it though, as a Black man, if I can get this class of white kids to sit down, listen, and grow and learn from me and respond to me, you can too. So that's why I say I don't really have much pity for them. I know we have cultural capital, but I don't have the cultural capital that they have. So whatever it is that they're lacking, they can get it too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That made me think of what you said, Chris, as far as like policing yourself. I remember when I taught in a rural county in North Carolina, I did say something that I would have said to like any of my Black kids. I said it to a white girl, and the parent like wants to have a conference and wants to meet about, you know, what I said. And I'm just like, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what to do with your white tears, but what happened? But I will say, after that event, I did find myself like pausing or switching up how I would communicate the same message to different children.
It's novel that white teachers don't think to do that when dealing.
They know.
Well, I told him, all right, I said my expectations are, and he just continued to do what he, because you didn't say, didn't I tell you? It's not that difficult to translate code switch. Maybe we do it all the time. Pointing in the fad.
So we kind of touched on it a bit in the last question, but I really want you to think about, like, was there a time in your career where you were made aware of your Blackness?
Oh yeah, day one. Now, you're a Black male in the classroom, so you are cherished, you are rare. I mean, this is like day one,
a Black male
filling out
uniform.
The paperwork. You feel me? They tell you off gate, there you just, oh, the kids are gonna respond so well to you, blah, 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 yada, 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 yada. If you need, it's just like, okay. So this is a big deal. Get it. Okay. All right. And it's been communicated loudly. It actually makes me, it stressed me out a little bit.
So I have a question with that context. that Chris just gave us. Were any of you ever given a walkie-talkie when you guys were still in the classroom?
I was never given a walkie-talkie, but it was all my teams had like a very good like cell phone policy. And so I guess like in the same way, everyone had each other's numbers. Like everyone had the office or admin or whatever on like speed dial or in a group me. So like the same concept, but just like we use our cell phones.
I mean, I've never had a walkie, but I've had a little camera set up for like my entire instruction, like almost the entire day. And if to kind of go back to this taxonomy piece, like it was like, why aren't there as many, why don't kids sit with their hands folded on the desk like they do in every other classroom in your classroom? So let's film the class and see like how often you're making that critique. Just like, well, hands, because I'm trying to focus on my learning objective right now. And I bet you every kid got that by the end of the class.
Yeah, my first year teaching, my instructional coach, like really similarly, would come in like 4 times a week and like sit with a camera or an iPad or something and pretend like none of the kids noticed her. And afterwards, we would like, she would like check off like, this kid was looking to the left when you said track, or this kid didn't have their hands folded, or this child was like, didn't get right to work as soon as you said go. And it like, she was like ticking off all these marks, and then I would get these like really bad observations, but my data was still really good. So I'm like, what are you observing? Like if they all, like you said, like Wallace said, if they all learned, if they all got the objective, if like the majority of kids can like tell you what we just did, why am I, what is
right.
So I was never given a walkie-talkie.
To be an overseer, not an educator.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. I didn't get a walkie-talkie. They just, and I'm not complaining about this. I actually welcomed it. But I was a seventh grade teacher, and the way I looked at it, these fifth graders and these sixth graders are going to be in my classroom next year. And I, instead of me having to gather them next year, let's just go ahead and get it done now. So there were plenty of days where a sixth grader would pop up at my door. I'm in the middle of my lesson. They're like, you know, Miss So-and-So sent me here. Oh, did she? So you were adding up in her room, so I would have to go ahead and like address it then, and sort of get them to put my class on pause for a minute. But I was good at it, so I wasn't complaining.
But that's not your job. That ain't your job.
It's not. And I offered it once or twice, like two specific kids, and then it just sort of became like a thing.
No.
And like there were kids who would rather get sent, even the eighth graders, they'd be like, I'm gonna send you down to Mr. White. And they were like, oh, no, don't do that. Okay, I'm cool.
Right.
And I mean, it was, you know, it's amusing. And you feel a little flattered, like, oh, okay, yeah, they know what it is. But at the same time, it's like, I don't plan now I need to start planning every lesson with the might get a kid break, like for, you know, some administrative time.
Oh, that's like a check.
So I have I had a theory that you guys just debunked. So apparently my theory was problematic. So because every time I would like meet Black male educators, or maybe this is just in my experience in the two schools I worked in, they would walkie-talkie. So that way they could help with administrative duties in the building. In terms So like all the schools I worked at, all the Black males had a walkie-talkie. And so when things would pop off in the building, like fights and stuff, they would walkie them, you know, just be like, oh, can you come down to such and such? Or can you go to Miss such and such room? Or can you go pick up this? Or hey, we need you to do this. So it's like they basically became like, had this administrative duty without administrative pay. And so, but also like some of them reveled in it and were proud to have this walkie-talkie, because I mean, this also meant that they could like have access to certain things that other teachers did not have access to in terms of the school power structure and dynamic. So I had a theory that all Black male teachers get walkie-talkies, and apparently you guys don't. Who knew?
Our leadership team, they all had walkie-talkies, and it was like, if you advance the leadership, you would, like you... That was
right. But Black male teachers were getting walkie-talkies without
day one.
A Black man, you in a classroom, we giving you a walkie-talkie. That sounds like they were hiring bouncers instead of teachers.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on. In my head, I'm like, aren't I busy? Like, how can I handle a walkie-talkie?
All these kids that I still gotta take care of?
Right.
Didn't you give me paid? Didn't you give me I had to grade stuff?
It's still problematic because it feeds into that stereotype of like the black male, like
physique, being on call,
and, like strong and like, you know, being tough and all this other stuff. But yeah, so, well, thank you for the debunking the myth.
I mean, it might be the revolutionary in me, but like I hear that and it's like another layer of not only policing the black student's body, but policing the black adult's body too.
Yeah.
It's like a quick, easy way to just like indoctrination by fire. Like, you gonna drink the Kool-Aid now. We're gonna lose.
Right.
You feel like you're a part of decision-making, but you're not getting any extra pay. You're not decision-making table. Yeah. You're just an extension of our authority.
Right. And so many of them were like I said, like they used, so many of them like loved that. Like they would like be doing the George Jefferson walk with their little walkie talkie.
Let me ask you a question. What kind of teachers, like what did they teach? And this is not to throw shade to anybody's content area.
It would be like literally like, anything, not like just ISS or PE. It would be like science, math, like people who taught core subjects as well.
Oh, no. Okay.
If they were black men, wild. They would have a walkie talkie. And I would just be like, and you know, but it does kind of like Wallace said, like it's an extension of like this white power structure. Ooh. Because they did in a sense become overseers, not only of children, but also of teachers. And so like one of my friends who was on a previous episode, Brittany, like she had this one black male teacher at her school pop up in her classroom with his little walkie talkie and gonna tell her what to do in terms of like classroom management when her kids were like playing a game or something like that. And he popped up in there like yelling and hollering at kids, wrecking ship and like sliding desks and stuff. And she was like, I had to go find him because she was like, this is my class. But it's like people feel like they have the authority to do that because they've been granted that authority from administration.
Well, I'm going to tell you, that's not a me thing. I don't do that. Like, I'm not a walkie-talkie person. I'm not going to come in your room unless you ask me to. Mm-hmm. I think it's ridiculous that they even had. I've seen support staff, and I've seen, like I said, people who have maybe longer planning periods or are more mobile throughout the school anyway because of whatever they teach or whatever they do. I've seen them have walkie-talkies, but the idea that they would just give core teachers walkie-talkies is OD.
I had a walkie-talkie one time, like for a homecoming dance that I was advising, and it was so worsome. No, I had one as part of school leadership, and I had that volume all day. Like, I didn't hear you. I'm sorry. And they're like, turn it to channel 4, and I'm like, it's 20. Listen, I'm a millennial. I don't know how to use a walkie-talkie.
If y'all don't send me a text and leave me,
you got a group chat. Put it in the group chat. Like.
So one of my questions for you all is, how can school leaders better support black male educators? Because we know that there's a shortage of black female educators, but there's an even greater shortage of black male educators. What do you think schools can do to better support black males?
I guess when it comes to supporting me as a black male educator, as an educator in general, I just need all the basic supports. Like, you know, I was a lateral entry teacher, so make sure there's a difference between what you teach me in class and what I've seen talked about in theory and then actually implementing it and implementing it successfully. And I think because we teach and our kids are always different, every cohort is gonna be different. You're gonna need like some consistent on the ground training, you know, in general. So I think making sure that we have the support that we would need to be able to do the job that we do well, that's important, just I think for anybody. But if you want to talk about increasing the amount of black males in the field, then we're talking about an entire systematic overhaul. I mean, you first encourage us to do more in schools when we're students, encourage us to cherish more than our athletics, and encourage us to build more than just our arts, or be good only in math, or be good only in science, or be good, or at least you're good at this. Grow us to actually care just about learning, and do that by diversifying your instruction, and do that by looking for innovative, you know, resources and techniques that are going to reach us in the first place. Second, make teaching look like something I would want to do. Make it a salary that's appealing to me. Yes. You know, show me more than just, oh, it's intrinsically rewarding. You'll
come
be
on,
making
no, it's
the
not.
Difference.
You need more than that. Cute. We live in a capitalistic system.
I needed to be just as financially rewarding as it is intrinsically rewarding. Because if you want to push this hyper-masculinity on the males that, you know, we talk about so much, that toxic masculinity. One major component of that is having the ability to be a provider, to be a caretaker, to be a breadwinner. And if I'm looking at teachers come to school and the ones I have look like they can barely afford to be happy with what they're wearing, or they're so excited about this new outfit, it must have taken a whole bunch to get it. It's not something I want to aspire to do. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Like, take the stress off of me as a teacher and you'll invite more people to become them, because the only people I've ever heard in my life be excited about being a teacher when I was a kid or when I was in high school were white girls.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's awesome.
That's it.
For you. But not because even the black girls, like, mm-mm, because them kids, the way I'm saying, I'm going to be a teacher. I want to teach my kids because these, you know, but it's not a whole lot of us like, yeah, let's teach. So if you want to talk about how we get more black males teaching, this is going to happen.
That I had to stop doing, like, as a teacher, when, like, I would hear students, like, black girls or black boys talk about wanting to be a teacher, or, like, black girls say to me, like, oh, I want to be a teacher just like you. And I, like, at some point, like, you know, some years are better than others. And at some years, I would just be like, no, you don't. Mm-mm. Don't do it. Go do something else. And I had to, like, consciously, maybe like 3 years ago, stop myself from doing that. Because if I am a link to the pipeline of black teachers, then I can tell them that, okay, it's difficult, without discouraging them from going down that path, because realistically, any career is difficult.
Yeah.
So I had to consciously stop doing that and to kind of help foster that desire to teach in my students, instead of being like, don't do it, like I was just miserable. Even if I was miserable, like, still trying to encourage them to do that, because I recognize that, like, that is how we get more teachers in the field that are black.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think I really appreciate how you guys are, like, looking at it from, like, not even like the adults, but also the kids. And so if we're asking the question, what can, like, school leaders do to support black male teachers, I think also look at how are you supporting black male students. Like, are they the most kids that are suspended? Are they the most kids that are getting sent out of class? Are they the most kids that you're constantly labeling as, like, problem kids? Are they the most kids that are being, like, overly, like, tested? And then, like, ask, if this is, like, as a black kid, if this is my experience with the school system, why would I want to come back?
Right.
And I think, like, right now, I often forget, just because, like, I know so many, like, black teachers, it's often, like, really shocking to me when I go to, like, these network PDs. I'm like, oh, wow, it's really just us out here. Wow. But I think in terms of support, what that looks like is, if in my experience, it's always been like, oh, okay, you're here, these are your goals, here they are, here's what you're supposed to do this year, great, have a fantastic year. And up until this, like, going into this year, I've never been able to, like, make my own, like, this is what I want to do in my classroom. Here's how I'm going to measure it. Here's how I'm going to, like, do whatever. It's always been, like, something that's handed to me. And I think, like, I've always felt most invested in what's happening in my classroom if I am, like, the one that is completely guiding it. And I think, like, what has happened with my other, like, colleagues of color, black colleagues, however have you, is that there's this is very, like, we're all, like, under a microscope with admin. It's like, what are you doing? People are constantly coming in and out of your classroom. We're constantly, like, in and out of meetings about, like, did you meet this mark? Did you meet this benchmark? Did you, like, whatever, whatever. And that same, like, microscopic view is not given towards, like, my white colleagues or stuff like that. I think just, like, in terms of support, look at how are you supporting, like, your black students, period, and then giving teachers, like, autonomy over what happens in their classroom. Because I think, like, when they have autonomy, that's, like, I trust you to get these kids to where they need to get to. And up until recently, I haven't felt, like, fully trusted by admin to do my job.
Wow. And that's a sucky feeling.
Yeah.
Definitely been there. That's why I left North Carolina. Don't do it. Don't do it. Some of us got to hold strong and, like, push this.
All right.
We got to fight. Wallace, did you have anything you wanted to add?
The only thing I would add, Trina, would definitely emphasize the point that the best thing they can do is pay us better. But also in terms of, like, keeping us in the classroom, I think leadership staff have to move away from even like in this, in 2020 and the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement, just like really taking front stage to the national conversation, it's like we're always, Black people, Black educators are always handed recommendations and then we're asked to react to it. Was it effective? Is it not effective? How can we do it better next time? But we're never given a seat at the decision-making table. So like, I think the best thing that leaders can do for Black educators is not only get them a seat at that table, but actual stake in the decisions being. Yeah, we should obviously elevate Black voices to those leadership roles, but even in the midst of that process happening, you can still have them at the table and have them make have input into these choices being made.
Right.
Can make the workplace, make the practices that we give our kids better for Black educators, and we'll have more Black educators stay in the classroom.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with all of, like, all of that.
No, it's like, we need to pass around an offering plate or something.
Yeah, like, listen, I already told them to donate. Listen, if y'all got some Cash Apps, because I know some people critique me, and I've gotten into lots of, like, arguments with people on the internet about this whole paying Black educators piece. But it's super important, especially, like I said, in a capitalistic society where Black people built this nation and we never received our 40 acres and a mule. We never got reparations for.
Oh, listen, though, don't do it. Don't do it. I got a whole reparations bill in mind now.
And so the thing is like when people are like, oh, well, it's about more than the money. Absolutely, it's about more than the money. But if we want Black people to be able to be financially stable and to build generational wealth for their families, then you have to pay Black educators. And Black people graduating from college or, you know, whatever route they decide to take post high school have a lot more options than we did before when being an educator in the Black community was a privileged position. And it still is, but it's not the main thing that people are going into, because why? I can make more money if I go be a nail tech. I can make more money if I go do HVAC. I can make more money if I become an engineer or whatever it may be. And so I think until we have real honest conversations about like capitalism, then it's not going to go anywhere. And like you said, like having people have a seat at the table, but also having a stake in the decisions that are being made at that table. Because so often, if we're looking at public school systems, because that's kind of like what I look at, we have Black people with seats at the table, but they are not having an active decision-making role in that table. So that's also very important. But
I think it's invaluable that teachers have, like every school, for just our students, that they have teachers who come from the communities that they live in. That when they go to school, you know, a school is a community stronghold. It's a place where we literally develop the young ones to go out into our world, right? So why not make sure that the people doing that raising, doing that teaching, doing that rearing are people from the very communities that they're coming from, that we're invested in making sure that we do a good job, because y'all are gonna be walking my streets. Y'all are gonna be leading. You're gonna be taking my place one day, you know? I mean, we're exactly right when we talk about capitalism having to be shifted and changed. And because at this point, it goes beyond Black male teachers. It just becomes about the Black community in general. If you want us, you hire us, you make us out to be the unicorns, right? Because you want us in those most challenging schools, because you want us where the poverty is highest and where the violence is the highest and where truancy is the big deal, you want us there, but then you pay us the least amount to go there. Or if you pay me more to go there, it's still not much. And you don't add any the amount of training that I would need to be successful there, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, hire me to teach your kids too. Train me the way you'd want me trained if I was teaching your kids. You know, invest in the schools as if your school went there and I feel like, or your kids went there and you would get better results. But I think because it's our communities, they're like, oh, that's enough. We put some Black kids, some Black teachers in there. That should be magical enough. That should turn things around.
Yeah, and it kind of goes like, what does it say? All the things you mentioned. And then what does it say when, okay, like we're in the, like we put them in the building, but then supports are lacking, or so the supports are lacking, or they're in the building, but like pay looks like how it does, like that. Good value, or is it just like tokenism to say that we're not racist?
Definitely see that. Y'all have given us a lot to think about, a lot. So now we're gonna go ahead and move to the principal's office. So I believe Wallace, you had a couple things you want to share in the principal's office. I'll give you the floor.
Cool. So I heard that y'all might have talked about this issue on your last episode.
Yes, we did.
I think we need to keep uncommon schools and KIPP schools in the principal's office. I've been seeing those networks just being appropriately dragged as they've seen like Instagram groups really highlighting the Black experience at both those charter school systems, and having worked for those schools, like I'm not totally here to bash them and to further drag them, but I think with any movement, with any effort, especially in education, we have to be honest and always looking to improve the product that we bring in front of our kids. Did Uncommon and did KIPP make some incredible gains for their time? Absolutely. But I think they have to be honest with themselves about how they can grow and continue to affirm Black life in a way that's productive. So they need to be in the principal's office so they can figure that one out.
Yeah. And they need to respond. They haven't responded to any of those claims.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It's like, we have all these experiences, whether it's coming from present or former students, present or former teachers, that have said, this was my experience. Mm-hmm. And I'm really waiting for these huge charter networks that openly profess to be here for like Black and Brown communities and saying, okay, this is our mission. This is kind of where, like, we can't deny the data. We can't deny like the growth that they have made. And also, like Wallace said, we still have to address this. And then, especially now, where do we go to grow from this?
Yeah, because when you're talking, Jonathan, about them addressing it, I've kind of made the face like they can't really respond to it because these are people's lived experiences. So they can't be like, well, that's not true. There are many receipts on those threads. But also a response could just be, okay, we are acknowledging that these claims have been made. We are investigating, doing our work. We apologize. Or
right, I'm listening. We're gonna change.
If you still had a PR person on your staff, because I think Success Academies resigned amid all the claims. So, but I think just an acknowledgement of, hey, we are going to work on something.
Yeah. And then kind of to throw it back to one of my favorite episodes, that walk it like you talk it. You can't just make these claims saying that you're going to change without actually doing it, because now there's a spotlight on you and people are going to be watching to see if you make the changes that you have actually said you're going to do. And it really makes them think about, or it's going to have to make them think about their purpose. And they may not even think about their purpose because they really know, but I want a lot of the families to really think about the purpose of the school, because if their purpose is to educate, uplift, and all these other things that the schools claim to do, but you're seeing their practices are not in alignment with that, then you as a parent need to rethink your child's placement in that building. And you need to like think closer or look closer at the school environment that your child is in.
Absolutely. I'm up here agreeing, like, and verbally affirming, and my mic was on mute, but yes.
So, because I know that there are a lot of charters who are just out there to make money and capitalize off of the many ballot mistakes that have happened in the public school system. But as parents, they still need to be watchful of those systems. So we want to thank our guests for being here. Wallace and Chris. We look forward to having them again. All of our guests, really, throughout this series, we've made so many connections with people. And the time slot that we have is just not long enough. So we have to cycle some of our guests back in. But guys, any parting thoughts before you before we end this episode?
Just that leadership matters. And if you are so lucky to be put in place of leadership, make sure that you take that seriously and be the leader that you would want or you didn't have. I've had great leadership over the last 4 years of my career, and it does make a huge difference on just how confident I feel as a teacher in what I do and being able to move across country. So leadership matters, like Black Lives Matter. Make sure you put your energy into both.
Yeah. Protect, and also protect your own energy. I think we operate in jobs that are very demanding, so it's always making sure that you are, as you're pouring out, you're also replenishing.
That's a good point. I like that.
Only thing I would add, as of today, the date that we're recording, Breonna Taylor's murderers are still walking free and breathing fresh. Mm-hmm. I'd like to point that out for the record. And then just shameless plug, if you are looking to do more to build community power, please follow at the Do More campaign. We're going to 10 different states this summer, including North Carolina, so I'd love to link up.
Are you guys coming to Virginia?
Also going to Virginia. Actually, in a
okay, I was about to say, you got to go through Virginia to get to North Carolina, but okay.
Yep. Virginia, July 11th, North Carolina later in the summer. So if we're coming to a spot near you, let's collaborate.
Yes. I look forward to that. So thank you guys again. And we will continue this series because we are Black preachers and we just end when we feel like
the Lord says so.
Yes. All right. Thank you all for listening. Make sure that you rate, review, and
subscribe.
Subscribe.
Bye.
Bye.
Can I help you? What do you want?